And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Now, before we get rolling into our open lines, we have a weekend host called Connie Willis, of course. And every once in a while, Connie has a feature called Where's Willis, where she goes all over the country looking for weird and unusual stories. And Connie's on the line with us now because she's got one. Where's Willis, Connie?
Where's Willis? Hey, Mr. George Norrie, how are you? I am safe, actually, at home, breathing in nice air. But I was recently at a pretty creepy spot. And, George, I tell you, you never know if a spot or an area is going to be creepy or not. But we have been very successful with, it's on my show on the Blue Rock Talk TV, where one of them is called On the Road with Connie, Project Creepy Hotspots. And I go to creepy hotspots. I take you with me. I go with researcher friends. And we live stream. So you're actually researching with us and investigating with us.
Oh, cool.
It's a ball. We either go to haunted places like Waverly Hills, or we go, camping 3 to 5 nights, and we're in RVs or trucks or cars or tents, and we've got Bigfoot and strange lights and creepy things like that, right? So recently, George, you're welcome to come to any one of these, okay? I want you to know.
Oh, yeah, sure. This one was in the Rockies this time, right?
Yeah, this is in the Rockies, and we went back to a place that it was with Jason Frank, who we've had on there before on Coast to Coast. He wrote the book Harry's, and he had taken me to this place before, same area. We just went maybe 5 mile radius, kind of different places around there. It's really kind of crazy. But the first time he ever took me there, I saw beams of light. I saw this Sasquatch that he calls Elvis looking in the window of the truck I was sleeping in. I was in the passenger side, and he was looking right in from the window of the truck from the driver's side. That's one of the scariest things of all.
Weird. Yeah.
It's pretty crazy, too. And all this stuff I saw, and I saw something as well that I would call sparkles. It was this, wall of sparkles, and I couldn't figure out what it was, but I noticed it. And it was very interesting because I've never seen this. It was kind of like, you would know, we grew up with lightning bugs.
Yep.
And when you saw those out in the field, and they just all, just
I love those little things. They were just gorgeous.
I agree. Well, this looked like that, but it was more of an LED-ish, not that glow, and it was subtle, and I've noticed that a lot. Well, we just went a couple weeks ago. We went back to that area just a little bit deeper and further in, and it was a Sasquatch Journey, a lady named Noelle and Chef Lou and Jason Frank, and we kind of were the core audience or group of people amongst all these other people. And when we first got to this area, the trees around us, you just heard noises constantly. You heard hoots and howls and jungle-like noises and Tarzan-like noises and metal-to-metal clank noises. Now, to me, that's UFO stuff. That's missing 411 stuff. That's scary. I don't like that.
How do you find these spots, Connie?
You know what? When you start researching and you're the real deal, you're not just trying to have fun on the weekends. You're actually looking. You start meeting all the right people, and you're out there doing it yourself. And so you all know what you're looking for, and so you know the right people, and they've been going to the places to establish relationships with these things because it's about relationships.
So if people want to watch this latest Where's Willis, how do they find you at Blue Rock?
Yeah. So they go to bluerocktalk.tv and sign up there. And I've even got a special for everybody, half off if you're a Coast fan. So you can see it at the top. But what you'll see is we discovered something new. They were kidding me about these sparkles. And one of the guys that had never, ever, ever had any dealings with any Bigfoot or anything like that. He just was, nice friends with Jason because, he's my buddy. But he had an incident with what he believed to be a Bigfoot, talking to him, telling him what to do, messing with him in a tent. He could not get over that mind speak that next day. But even worse, the next day he saw what he experienced outside his tent and in the dark through a camera.
Jeez, and you've got it on video.
What we got.
Super. And again, how do people see it?
They go to BlueRockTalk.tv, BlueRockAndTalk.tv. Sign up there. You can see the 60-second video there, and then the whole series of all that 5 days is right there. And we're going to get together soon, and we're going to talk about what we saw. We're going to show filters of it from the actual camera. And there's some other little things that have happened, too, that's disturbing. But we think we might have something that shows what these things might turn into.
Super. Thanks, Connie, and keep doing the great work you do. Where's Willis? Where she goes all over the country looking for weird and unusual things. Connie Willis. Let's go to open lines now. Carlos in Carson, California, to get us started. Hello, Carlos.
Good evening, George. Haven't talked to you in a while, but let's give you a little bit of a paranormal story and then a statement on COVID-19, if you don't mind.
Sure thing. Go ahead.
Years ago, I had a dream, and in the dream, Duke Snyder appeared to me, the baseball player.
The old baseball player, Duke Snyder.
Right.
He was one of the best.
Right. I had met him as a kid here in downtown L.A. because I was one of his fans. In 1959, I met him. He appeared to me in a dream. I don't know. It might have been 6-7 years ago. The next morning, I was watching television, and there came a newsflash that says, former Dodger great Duke Snyder has passed away.
Oh.
That really floored me. I'm still stunned by that experience. I think it was some kind of message or something.
Yeah, it's strange synchronicity, isn't it?
Yeah, really. But listen, COVID-19, I think we're being scammed, George.
Really? You do, huh?
I really think so. Look,
tell me why.
There's a statement that David Rockefeller made one time. He says, we're on the verge of a radical global transformation. All we need is an appropriate crisis to bring in a new world order. And I think that's the essence of what's going on right now. A new world order is coming in. What bothers me even further is connecting further dots. The Rockefeller Foundation donates a lot of money to the National Institute of Health, of which Fauci is affiliated with the National Institute
yep.
of Health. So I think they're financing him to scandalize all these figures, George. And for instance, Social Security apparently is giving $13,000 to hospital for every identified virus patient and $39,000 that they put on ventilators. So there's a lot of things here that are going on that reinforces the concept of scandalization of the virus.
You are absolutely correct, Carlos. Something very weird is afoot here. Look, this is a bad virus. It's real, and it's out there. The flu is bad, too. It's real, and it's out there. But I think what has happened is some of these people that you have kind of mentioned are taking advantage of a tragic situation to benefit their goals and what they want to accomplish. And that's what's happening with all of this. I mean, it's just uniform where they're shutting down everything, and nothing's working, by the way. Assuming these statistics are correct, and I don't think they are, but assuming for a moment they are, they've got everybody on lockdown. They've closed down restaurants. In many cases in California, you can only eat outside. You can't go inside. You can take your mask off when you sit down, but you got to put it on when you get up. It's just there's something strange about all of this. And, nothing's working. Again, with these statistics, they keep going up. They can't shut this planet down forever. They just can't. There's going to be more problems than people getting sick. And we got to be able to build up an immunity. It's a sad situation. We're going to have to see what happens. But it can't continue too much longer. First-time caller Paul in Dayton, Ohio. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Well, hello, George. I like your show. I listen to it every night.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
Sorry I missed Colonel Randall. I was surprised when he said it kind of aged him when he said he's been working on this stuff for 50 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I hate to tell you, it might age me when I tell you about the sightings I had with with Project Blue Book.
T- Tell us.
Back in about 80, well, actually about 68, we were getting a bunch of sightings here over Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And back then it was a Strategic Air Command base. And we actually went out, we measured a luminous blob floating over the runways. And called Major Quantinella, who was the head of Project Blue Book at the time.
That's right.
And part of the challenge is that the Air Force was kind of blowing a lot of these things off. The first thing he said to me was, well, you just saw Venus. I said, no, we didn't, because we measured the altitudes, the azimuth, and all the different functions that we could measure, and we knew we weren't looking at Venus.
Right. You knew what you were looking at, that's for sure.
We knew it wasn't Venus, but many of those sightings, I think, just got, you know, buried. Now, at the time, Project Blue Book, Quantinella, they were part of what we called Foreign Technology Division. And my son-in-law's, son-in-law's father was a colonel who flew some, well, we'll just say crates from Roswell to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And from then on, we had all the stories about the bodies of aliens being hidden at the base. So just thought Kevin would be interested in some of that information.
He would have loved that information. That's a great story, Paul. Thanks for that. Next up, it's our friend Cornelius in Louisiana. Hello there, sir. How are you?
Hello there, George. How y'all doing there?
We're doing. You feeling better?
Oh, yeah. I was just telling Gina. Gina hadn't known I was sick. But, George, look, on the prayer line and stuff, just like I know y'all are praying for Rush, too. Rush Radio, he's a good man and tough.
Oh, he's fighting lung cancer. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, but, George, I wanted to thank my friends, Miss Terry, Miss Ruthie, and Miss Denise, and then my other friend you heard, Wayne from Tacoma. I woke up, George, when Wayne's voice come on. When Barry and Wayne's voice come on a mic, I kind of wake up.
Wayne's got the voice of God, doesn't he?
He has the voice for radio. He's supposed to be listening. I just talked to him on the phone a minute ago. Of course, Mike, the millennial, and then my best friend, Barry, from Rock Hill, South Carolina.
I'm meeting Mike this weekend as we do our Beyond Belief TV shows.
Hey, great. And George, I just want to say this. A lot of the callers and listeners, if you ever get a chance, go to these things where George and Tommy are at. They're real people. They're not like these phonies, these actors and stuff, you know. Y'all are real people. That's all. I met you at the Oswald conference down there in New Orleans. But George, I was so glad y'all didn't come to Houston.
Well, you know, I wanted to come to Houston when hopefully we'll get there next year with our live stage show. But they have shut Houston down totally. Now tell me, because we're going to do something for you. Have you accumulated your hospital bills yet? You got all that stuff yet?
I'm waiting on it now, George. They ought to be sending it sometime.
All right. I need you to have someone like Ruth set up a GoFundMe campaign. We can't do that for you, but what we will do is tell people about it once it's set up. All right?
Okay. I'll get Ruthie to, because she's always emailing you and George and Tommy. So I know Ruthie. I call her Ruth Radio. She got me that Sea Crane radio that I love. Because my MP radio quit out, and that was my military police radio that I had in the Army. But, George, what I wanted to say, you know, and I know you won't. Well, in a way, this has been a miracle that you've become sort of my friend, and then, like I said, I got my other friends out there and stuff. I love Miss Louise from Louisville, the reincarnated Cleopatra.
She's something else.
That lady is something else. And, of course, our friend Annie from Alabama. I just love them ladies when they call in with their stories.
Well, it's become a family-type show. You know that.
I'm so glad when you kick off the racist and stuff like that and, you know, and blame the Jews or other things like that.
There's no place for that on radio as far as I'm concerned.
But like the Bible says, it's a God of this world that's creating all this stuff. And I believe, just like Carlos was talking, I love Carlos, too. He's right on top of this stuff. But, George, you sent something about this months ago when we're going into 2020 that something bad was going to happen.
Yep.
And I believe the communist Chinese did this on purpose to destroy these mom and pops, because you see all the big box stores are staying open.
We can't rule that out. That's a distinct possibility. I mean, my gut tells me it was accidental, but the fact that they were even playing around with viruses and doing these things just doesn't make any sense.
Well, let me say one more thing, and I'm going to let – I hope Barry's on the line. I hope he's listening. I was trying to call him when you and Tommy were talking about him coming to Everett, Washington, and he was asleep, so I could never get him on the line. But I hope he's calling in and stuff so he can talk. He's got a story he wants to tell you.
Yeah, he told me last week he had one. But you take care, my friend. But we'll get to him sooner than later. Let's go next to. Whose turn? How about Ann in Bloomington, Illinois? Ann, welcome to the show.
Hello, George. Good to talk with you again.
You too. What's up?
I have a suggestion or an idea for you.
Sure, go ahead.
Remember at the end of the year and the beginning of this year, you had the psychics, the astrologers.
Right, talking about the new year and things like that.
And they all said it's going to be a doozy.
Yep, it is.
And can you play back some of that talk with us so we could catch up with what they were talking about and how it really relates to what we're going through?
Yeah, we can have some people dig it up for us, and we have to do a little editing with that, so I can't do it real quickly, but somewhere down the line we'll do something like that for you. Let's go to Jim in Auburn, Washington. Welcome to the show. Hey, Jimmy. Thanks for calling.
Hey, George. I've been listening to you guys since 1995. Tried to get in different times, but didn't make it. But I'm one of your 15-cent-a-day guys.
Oh, great. You're an insider. Good for you.
Yep. And anyway, in 1950, when I was in 12th grade, I was a paper boy. I carried the Des Moines Register and Tribune. So we'd have to pick up our papers at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
And it was in the spring of 1950. And anyway, I'm going down West 10th. To the branch to get my papers, and looking out towards the airport in Des Moines, which is out southwest of Des Moines, I saw this blue light up in the sky. And as it got closer and closer and closer, and it wasn't coming fast, but as it got closer and closer, I realized there was no noise to it. And the thing came, so I started running towards the branch because I was going to get the other paper boys in the branch out to look at it. And it came right over downtown Des Moines, so the lights from Des Moines reflected on it, and it was the shape of a cigar, and it had sort of like a silky blue light from the front to the back.
Classic UFO case, Jim. Classic case. We'll be back with more Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Open Lines. George Norrie back with you. Let's go right to the calls. Mike in Buffalo, New York, to get us started. Hello, Mike. Thanks for calling. Hello.
Yeah, how's it going, George?
Okay.
Yeah, I've been trying to get this call out about this story. Well, it happened in 1972. I even tried calling Art Bell. I used to drive tractor trailer for about 30 years.
Ah, okay.
And now, but now I'm just doing maintenance. But anyways, to get back to the story, it was crazy. I was going to college. I used to go to Morrisville College. It was about 20 miles southeast of Syracuse on US 20. So we'd take 5 and 20 out of Buffalo. Sometimes we'd take the thruway, but we were taking 5 and 20. We were around Batavia, New York, and it was all rural, dark. It was about 8:30 at night, and we're going back, and I was just haphazardly looking out the window, and John, the guy I was with, was just driving. We had a he had a 66 Mustang, so he's driving, and I'm looking out the, and it's just fields, trees, fields, and we hit this one section with these large trees, and I'm just looking. But as soon as we got into the field, I was looking out the window. As soon as we cleared the trees, I just end up screaming at the top of my lungs. I go, "John, stop the car!" He slams on the brakes, turns to me, he goes, "What?" He never finished the word "what." He went, "What?" And he's looking. And he's looking out. We're both looking out in this field. He slowly backs the car up. Here's this UFO. It's about the size of a two-car garage. It's about 12 to 15 feet off the ground, but it's below the trees. If it would have been above those high trees, everybody would have seen it.
Right.
But it is below the trees. And we're looking, and I go, roll the window down. You hear all the night creatures, the little crickets and everything, chirping and everything. And I'm going, what the hell? And he goes, I just can't believe this. And we're both looking. We're just, it's unbelievable.
Could you see any windows in it, Mike?
No windows.
No windows.
All metallic. There were two little lights, a red and a green light. And they were flashing, like little square lights. There was one in the top and one like diagonal from each other, and they were flashing. I go to John. I go, geez. I go, if that thing was up in the sky, it would probably look like an airplane or a helicopter. So we're both looking at this. They had cameras in the trunk. Didn't want to get. I go, we should walk up to it. It's so close. It's like only 20 yards off the road.
Jeez.
And we're looking at this thing. It's just there hovering. No engine sounds, no nothing. And all of a sudden, this car is coming up. Almost didn't even realize it was up on us. It slowed down. Thought we had car problems. This car pulls up alongside of us. I reach out the window and start pointing towards the field. This guy just punches it, and he's gone. He just...
He didn't want to be around there at all. Now, how did this thing disappear? How did it leave?
Well, you know what? We left it. We sat there for 8-10 minutes. We're just looking at it. It was not leaving. And I'm going, you know, we could probably go tell somebody, but it's probably going to be gone. So we just slowly drove away, watched it, and just sat there.
What a great sighting. That's a great story, Mike. My gosh. And you know what? It's real. I can tell in your voice. You're not making that up. Barry in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Hello there, stranger.
What do you say, old buddy, old pal, old friend of mine?
I see. I can't say that, or I have to pay a fee to you for that.
That at $200, but I'm not going to charge you this time. Anyway, I've got a funny story, George, about the earthquake last Sunday morning.
Oh, it was the biggest in 104 years, wasn't it?
That's exactly right, 1916. And, George, I want to tell you, you've heard the funny part. I told Tommy and Gina and Cornelius and Mike, and you know about it. I had a little accident when I... Anyway, 8 o'clock, about, I woke up after going to sleep after Coast to Coast, and I had to go to the bathroom, so I get up, go to the bathroom, and I'm standing there, George, and this was the most profound 4 seconds. George, is all it lasted. I felt the rumble come up in my yard, up the foundation of my house, into my feet, and almost right out the top of my head.
It's a weird feeling, isn't it?
It was. I'm 77 years old, George. I've never seen a UFO, and I've never felt an earthquake. Of course, Tommy said, well, that happens out here every other day.
Oh, it does. It does. I've felt a couple of them. You know, I felt one in the Midwest, believe it or not, but... I felt a few in California, too, and they're just weird feelings. I mean, because you have no control over everything. Everything's shaking.
Well, that was the thing. And actually, a candle holder fell off a shelf in the kitchen and hit the kitchen counter. Jeez. And woke Martha up. She was asleep. She didn't even feel the thing. But I'm telling you, George, I talked to a geologist in Charlotte day before yesterday. And he said the reason that I felt it, it's 90 miles away from here, Sparta, North Carolina.
That's pretty close.
Yeah, it really is. But it's right on the fault line that runs due south from Sparta, right through Charlotte and Rock Hill. It's the fault line. It's the Catawba River Valley fault line. And that geologist told me that was the reason I felt it so good at only 5.1 magnitude.
Man, you were lucky. What a weird feeling. But after that, no aftershocks or anything like that?
Nope, not another thing. And most people slept right through it or didn't feel it. But the ones that did feel it, I've talked to, they were profoundly affected too, George.
I bet you wish you never in another one again, huh?
Well, it was actually exhilarating. I was thrilled. I was thrilled after it was over now.
You liked it?
Well, like I said, George, 77 years without ever feeling one, it was fun to feel it.
One is enough as far as I'm concerned, Barry. That's all I wanted to go through, one. But I felt a couple of them. There was one where in our studio, the whole building was rocking and rolling. And they're weird feelings. They really are. Next up, let's go to Jeff in Santa Rosa, California. Hi, Jeffrey. Go ahead.
How you doing, George? Pleasure speaking with you again, personally.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. I have a question for you that has to do with your naval intelligence. I don't really know if you can answer it or not. I was going to ask it to the lieutenant colonel, but there's a lot of guys in line ahead of me. I had an opportunity, I was given one, to write a UFO report about several UFOs that I witnessed to OSI that the military was interested in.
Okay. All right.
And I took advantage of it and did. But there was no follow-up on it, which I would have thought would have been standard operating procedure with a 75-year no-talk clause, coffin clause attached to it. But it never happened. So I'm wondering if you might be able to tell me why. Like, was it because I didn't have enough classification for it? Or my main concern is considering the environment today with politics, which does affect the military also. That maybe some rogue element in a choke point got a hold of the information and filtered it before it got up to the top. Now, the airmen that I spoke with at OSI are dedicated, patriotic, and very, very polite. And I don't want to put the corkscrews on them, but I'm wondering if you might be able to answer that question since you had all that contact with the upper brass.
Well, in your particular case, they must have been afraid of something leaking out or something. They didn't want it. And, I mean, how did they treat you?
They were very polite.
They were polite. All right.
Yeah, that was the guys in the office that I was talking with. You know, and they just passed the stuff up. But they couldn't make any decision on their own there.
What clearance were you at by that time?
Well, I didn't have any clearance.
Oh, you didn't have
one. I had one when I was working for the Marine Corps because I was working crypto gear and radio stuff, but that was just a temporary clearance.
That might have had something to do with it, too. I had a top secret clearance, and even at that point, there's not too much they want you to say, that's for sure. Let's go to Louise Cleopatra in Louisville, Kentucky. Hi, Cleo. Are you there? There you go.
Thanks to Cornelius for his kind words, and I want Cornelius to know that his name is a family name in my family. My father's mother was named Cornelia.
Now, when you talk about your father's mother, are you talking about Cleopatra's father or yours?
My father in this lifetime. She was my grandmother.
You've had so many lifetimes, I can't keep track of you, Louise.
I've had so many, I can't keep up with them myself. I try to just limited to, you know, a few that I can always concentrate on. But my grandmother was the queen of Amenhotep III. Amenhotep III was the father of Akhenaten.
Really?
Yes.
How do you know all this stuff?
George, I know my people from way, way back. I know myself from way, way back.
Are the reincarnated versions of all these people from way gone back, the Egyptian era, are they around now as other humans?
Yes. Oh, yes. And what the people need to realize, what I want the people to do, when I say the people, I mean the Coast to Coast family, look up the hieroglyphs on the internet, because the hieroglyphs, the ABCs that we use today are the same as the hieroglyphs of thousands of years ago.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. A is, you know, I mentioned before about this, the A is the king. The B is the foot, you know, just divided in half, you know, and the C is a basket. But they're the same. The D is the hand. I could teach this easily because I know it. But the people need to look at it because it was on Ancient Aliens Today. They spent 30 minutes talking about the hieroglyphs on Ancient Aliens Today. And I want people to know they need to review this, because when the gods come back, they're going to ask you something, and you have to tell them what you know, and you have to tell them about the language of the gods.
Doesn't Cairo mean Mars?
Yes, it does.
Why? Why? What's going on with that? What do you think?
Oh, sometimes I know and sometimes I forget. Because when I've heard that, you know, long ago, I was like, oh, yeah, that does make sense.
Is it because you're a Martian?
Well, I'm from the Pleiades.
See, you never know with those things. You never know. Jim in Philadelphia. Hey, Jim, take it away.
Hi, George. Nothing better than ending Friday night with Coast to Coast.
I love it. Me too.
I have a celebrity lighthearted golf story for you real quick. That'll take
all right.
A minute.
Sure thing.
I travel for my job, and I was recently in Madison, Wisconsin. And when I was checking into the hotel, I mentioned this to someone. I said, you know, when I was driving here, I saw Chris Farley drive. Is he from the area? And they're like, oh, yeah, Chris Farley actually grew up here. And actually, that road ends at the cemetery where he rests. So I had nothing going on that afternoon, so I thought I would take a drive and just go visit his grave. And I looked, he's in a mausoleum there. He's resting in a mausoleum.
Is like a family thing?
Yes, yes. Well, actually, it's a large building. It's a very large building. And he's in the very back of the building, and he's like 10 feet up. It's like an 8-foot high.
Way up there.
Up. And I looked, and there's huge letters, Christopher Farley, right there. And I had been going through a really hard time in my life. I just lost a family member, gone through a horrible divorce, and I was just really sad and depressed. I had been for quite a while.
Sorry to hear
so
that.
So I set out. I was the only one in the building, and I'm standing in front of Chris Farley's mausoleum plaque, right? And I said out loud, I'm like, Chris, you know, you always made people laugh, and you were my favorite comedian. I wish there was a way you could make me laugh now. Can you make me laugh? Within 10 seconds of saying that, the cell phone in my pocket started barking like a big Doberman pincher. Bark, 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 bark. I have never set that on my phone. I was not getting a call. I was not getting a text. I jumped 2 feet in the air. It was so weird. I jumped 2 feet in the air. I pulled my phone out of my pocket and looked, and it was barking like a dog. So I stopped. My hands were shaking, and I was standing there by my lawn, by myself, and I started to laugh. It made me laugh.
See, he did what you asked him to do.
10 years after Chris Farley died, he came back and made me laugh.
That is funny. Yeah, he went way too early, didn't he?
He certainly did. He certainly did.
God, he used to crack me up. The way he would scream and do all his things, he was funny. Sam Kinison was funny, too. He died in a tragic car accident going back and forth from L.A. and Las Vegas. Next up, let's go to, do we have time for another quick call? Yeah, we might be able to squeeze one in. Let's go to James in Leavenworth, Kansas. Hey, James, go ahead, sir.
Hey, George, how you doing tonight?
Okay, how about you?
Pretty good, pretty good. I just wanted to say I'm a police officer and I work midnights, and I know you and the show support the police.
Absolutely. But
and with everything going on, I just wanted to say that we appreciate the support, because it's been interesting. I mean, luckily we haven't had anything major here, but it's trying at best and stressful.
Absolutely. And then no cutbacks or anything like that?
Not in our department, knock on wood.
Well, that's good.
But it's...
Well,
I've got friends that work at the federal level and other departments are just being ravaged.
Well, you know, it's important for folks to know, James, for every bad episode that occurs with police, there are 9 good ones that you guys do and gals do all the time.
And the bad part about it is the bad episodes you always hear about, but you never hear about the good episode.
No, very rarely do you hear, you know, a policeman saved somebody's life by pulling them out of a car
example,
or stuff like
good
that.
Good example, I think it was over in Overland Park about 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, a couple of young officers saved a little, I think it was like a 2-year-old baby's life.
How'd they do that? Was it like a car accident or choking or something?
I think if I remember right, I think the kid was choking on something.
And they just got there in the nick of time. That's fantastic. But you're right. Those kinds of stories aren't publicized. But the bad cases, like the George Floyd episode, everybody knows about those things. We're going to come back with more open lines in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.